A reading from the book of Sirach. Blessed the husband of a good wife. Twice lengthened are his days. A worthy wife brings joy to her husband. Peaceful and full is his life. A good wife is a gracious gift, bestowed upon him who fears God. Be he rich or poor, his heart is content, and a smile is ever on his face. A gracious wife delights her husband, and thoughtfulness puts flesh on his bones. A gift from the Lord is her governed speech, and her firm virtue is a surpassing worth. Choicest of blessings is a modest wife, priceless her chaste soul. A holy and decent woman adds grace upon grace. Indeed, no price is worthy of her temperate soul. Like the sun rising in the Lord's heavens, the beauty of a virtuous wife is the radiance of her home. The word of the Lord. In you, Lord, I have found my peace. O Lord, my heart is not proud, nor are my eyes haughty. I busy not myself with great things, nor with things too sublime for me. Nay, rather, I have stilled and quieted my soul like a weaned child. Like a weaned child on his mother's lap, so is my soul within me.
In you, Lord,
O Israel, hope in the Lord, both now and forever.
In you, Lord, I have found my peace.
Dominus vobiscum. Lectio Sancti Evangelii secundum Lucam. Jesus journeyed to a city called Nain, and his disciples and a large crowd accompanied him. As he drew near to the gate of the city, a man who had died was being carried out, the only son of his mother, and she was a widow. A large crowd from the city was with her. When the Lord saw her, he was moved with pity for her and said to her, "Do not weep." He stepped forward and touched the coffin. At this, the bearers halted, and he said, "Young man, I tell you, arise." The dead man sat up and began to speak, and Jesus gave him to his mother. Fear seized them all, and they glorified God, exclaiming, "A great prophet has arisen in our midst, and God has visited his people." This report about him spread through the whole of Judea and all the surrounding region. Verbum Domini. Today we celebrate the memorial of Saint Monica, the mother of Saint Augustine. Tomorrow we celebrate Saint Augustine and his memorial. So it's fitting the church puts them together, because without Monica there is no Saint Augustine, one of the greatest doctors of the church, had a huge impact in church history and with his teaching and witness. Monica is a witness, her life is a witness to families and mothers. She prayed for St. Augustine in his long struggle and journey to find the truth. And I think it's a witness that it ain't over till it's over. Both had their own struggles, even growing up. Augustine writes that his mother as a young girl would fetch the wine out of the cellar for the family and help herself to some, and she was called out by another servant, you know, that she was drinking too much and things. And she herself had a difficult marriage to an unbeliever, but even he would be baptized 1 year before his death. Monica would have 3 children, and she would pray for them all, you know, in their conversion. She was born in 332 in North Africa in the city of Tagaste, which is present-day Algeria. And we know that, as I mentioned, her own marriage had this struggle with Patricius, a Roman civil servant, bad temper, hated religion, unfaithful to Monica, to his wife, but was baptized. Augustine himself was known for his struggles, that he fathered a child out of wedlock, practiced Manichaeism, and when he went to do that, Monica shunned him and threw him out of the house, so to speak. And then 3 years, or sometime later, she took him back in 377 and continued to pray for him. 9 years later, he would convert. But during that 9-year period there, he left North Africa there and went to Rome and later Milan. And he left her without even telling her, you know, just real suddenly. So you can see there's great struggles in their family. And I think many of us can relate to that. There's a lot of brokenness and sinfulness. But she turned to the Lord, you know, had great prayer, and offered up her tears. In fact, a local bishop in Tagaste said that it's impossible that the son of such tears should perish. Impossible. And that's what we see in the gospel, that the woman doesn't even say anything to Jesus. He sees her as moved with pity. Do not weep. Touch the coffin. Young man, I tell you, arise. The dead man sat up and began to speak and gave him to his mother. It's powerful. It's such a great reading for Augustine, because he got up and began to speak. Right? He wrote, you know, if you look at the Catechism Day, there's more quotes from Augustine than even Thomas Aquinas. Cardinal Ratzinger, the editor, is an Augustinian in his theology. It makes sense, but still it shows the importance of his writings and the fullness of his teaching. Way back there in the 300s, Augustine would write in his Confessions about his mother. He said, "For she wept and prayed to you for me, more than mothers are accustomed to weep over the bodily deaths of their children. You heard her, Lord, and did not disregard her tears when they streamed down and watered the earth in every place where she prayed. You truly heard her." Augustine reflected as well on how his mother rejoiced greatly at his conversion and baptism, seeing her long years of prayer answered. You know, she would follow him to Italy, you know, and to be alongside of him in his work. In chapter 11 of the Confessions, book 9, he writes, "And now you stretched forth your hand from above and drew up my soul out of the profound darkness, because my mother, your faithful servant, wept to you on my behalf more than mothers weep over the bodily deaths of their children." You know, it's just so beautiful that her heart was so moved. And I think of the continuation of this intercessory prayer, especially in women religious today. You can think of contemplative nuns and things. Vatican II said that the more fervently then they are joined to Christ by this total lifelong gift of themselves, the richer the life of the church becomes, and the more lively and successful its apostolate. That Marian dimension of the church, we say, that dimension of holiness and prayer and contemplation, it precedes the Petrine dimension, the dimension of the office holders of the church, absolutely necessary, the foundation of the church to preach, to foster faith, to minister the sacraments. But that life of holiness is of the essence. That's the essence of God. He is holiness, and he's called us to share in that holiness, you know, to have and be part of this rich life of the church, that we need to pray for others, to intercede for others, and need to just have communion with God for fruitfulness. Without me, you can do nothing, right? He says that we must be joined to him as the branch needs to be joined to the vine. And in general, I think mothers and women, just in general, you know, have this special, John Paul II would write that their ability to be mothers also, you know, is seen in the physically, in being mothers of their children, but also a spiritual motherhood. And that the women are given these gifts to be a mother in the physical and spiritual sense, the special ability to pay attention to another person. They have a heightened, more than the man, a sensitivity to the individual, to the person, to their needs. You know, men oftentimes can see maybe the whole, maybe it's a call to leadership, to guide and things. Sometimes they can lose sight of the person and their needs on an individual level. So motherhood involves in a special way the physical part of a woman, her psychological and even spiritual, you know, that she is connected to the child, given these gifts to raise, to nurture the child. And then a special gift as well, just to give of herself. You know, women can submit and lay their lives down for their children in an unbelievable way. There's part of their gift package, that they are just attentive to others. They're especially attentive to their children. And this is, I think, a great image of the church. The church is a mother. Now, yes, you have that dimension of the priesthood that's preaching and proclamation, administering the sacraments, but you have this, as I said, the Marian dimension that's praying for conversion, that's offering sacrifices, that's serving others, you know, to bring them to the faith. And that's what's captured here, I think, in this first reading from Sirach. It says, the husband of a good wife, his days are twice lengthened. A worthy wife brings joy to her husband. Peaceful and full is his life. How about eternal life? You know, that's a fullness. How many wives have sanctified their husbands? I hear that from husbands all the time. My wife's better than me. She practices the faith. She has greater virtues, the noblest of virtues, of faith, of charity, long-suffering, quicker to believe, quicker to serve. A good wife is a generous gift bestowed upon him who fears the Lord. Her thoughtfulness puts flesh on his bones. He thrives. Eve is referred to as his helpmate. And the word itself suggests help coming from the Lord that the man needs, that he can get caught up in killing and, you know, tilling and keeping the garden, and that work can consume him. It can be all about work. He needs to be humanized. He needs to be brought back in relationship with the Lord, to be pointed towards God. Sirach says, a holy and decent woman adds grace upon grace. Isn't that beautiful, the practice of the faith? We see that repeatedly in the church. You know, the faithfulness of women praying, and I, as a priest, you see it all the time. You know, the mothers, grandmothers are just praying for their children constantly and talking about them and you know, just aching for them. Where would the world be without that prayer, without that sacrifice? You know, if there's conversion, it's because somebody was praying for you and for me. Yes, the church does that as a whole, but God bless our mothers and those who pray and love us and are concerned for us and won't rest until we're in heaven.